Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
And welcome, seekers, to podcast number 78 of God Beyond the Bible. We are a podcast made by seekers and for seekers. As always, we hope we serve as a source of encouragement for your life. If you are a first-time listener, all you need to benefit from listening to us is an open mind. And having an open mind doesn't mean that we will embrace everything we hear, but only that we are willing to consider that there are other ways to think and believe about things like God, the Bible, and spirituality.
And our shout-outs today are to our listener in Put-In Bay, Ohio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. And the quote of the week is a quote of my own. Now, I'm sure a lot of people said things like this, but this is just one that I think of. And it goes like this. What I believe determines how I see the world. How I see the world determines my quality of life. Therefore, to change my quality of life, I must change what I believe.
You want to say that's good, but you don't want to give him the big head.
Yeah, you got to watch that ego.
Don't feed the ego. Well, then, you know, oh, no, you can't change what you believe. Well, we're always convinced, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Right. We're always convinced we believe right.
Well, last episode, we explored the concept of karma, and we came to the conclusion that most, if not all of us, embrace the concept, even if we don't use the title karma.
So in this episode, we'd like to explore another principle of life called the law of attraction. Like karma, this very powerful principle is widely acclaimed to be a key component of our personal happiness and success in both the spiritual and physical realm.
And for those of us who may be totally unfamiliar with the law of attraction, did you guys know anything about this before you...
I knew the concept. I really didn't know what it was called.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, for those of us who may be, as I was a year ago, unfamiliar with the law of attraction, we'll begin our adventure by attempting to define this principle. It is akin to karma in the sense that we receive back what we send out, either positive or negative energy, and it's sort of like planting a seed, and it returns for us to harvest sometime in our future.
However, unlike karma that is based on speech and outward actions, the law of attraction deals with our belief and thought process. And our quote of the day pretty much defines the law of attraction. Our beliefs dictate how we see the world and other people, and how we see the world will dictate our happiness and quality of life. So in short, if I am not experiencing a fulfilled and happy life, I need to check my belief system.
Okay, so let's imagine a circle.
Are you going to imagine or imagine?
I'm going to image in a circle. Like a little typo there.
Okay, imagine a circle. Here we go. Yeah,
we're going to imagine a circle. And let's divide that circle in half at the middle, like the equator at the globe on the Earth. Okay. We have two halves or hemispheres, an upper and a lower. Now, let's imagine that the upper half of the circle is where we have our conscious thought. That's where we take in and categorize everything that we see and hear. One of the main ways we categorize things is by determining whether what we see and hear is good or bad, or maybe just right or wrong. We're actually attaching emotion to the person or event based on how we think we should feel about the circumstance or the event. We do this tens of thousands of times a day. without having to devote hardly any conscious thought to it, all done in the conscious part of the mind, the upper half of that imaginary circle.
So, how do we do that thousands of times each day with such little effort? Because in the lower half of Trayson's imaginary circle is our subconscious mind. This is where our belief system is. Actually, this is where our ego, fear, everything is that we've got is in our subconscious that directs us through life. But anyway, this is where our belief system is. This is where we have set a standard of what is good or bad, right or wrong, moral or immoral, you know, true. That's where we set our truths. That's right. Where we establish what we believe to be truth, or truth as we see it. Think of it this way. Everything we encounter in our day that enters our conscious mind is categorized by our conscious mind in a split second, because the conscious mind depends on the subconscious standards of good and bad that are programmed in it, if that makes any sense.
It does. And something I thought about here that kind of clears it up with the idea of the conscious and the unconscious mind, because a lot of us think of the unconscious or the subconscious as what comes up when we're sleeping or things like that. When you're carrying on a conversation and driving down the highway, your conscious mind is the part that is carrying on the conversation. Right. You're talking with someone and your unconscious mind is the part that is calculating how you need to maneuver the accelerator and the brake and the steering wheel to go around a curve, because you don't stop the conversation and think about that.
That's right. That's right. So.
Okay, so it's for this reason that we seldom read, hear, or see anything that we don't already have an opinion on.
Yet.
This opinion comes from the subconscious standard that we have been programmed to believe as truth. So how does our subconscious get programmed? Well, it begins when you're an infant. We develop our standards of acceptable and unacceptable by the environment that we grow up in.
And let me stop you right there. Mm-hmm. That's a reason. All of our what's true to one is not always truth to the other. That's why what is acceptable to one might not be acceptable.
My truth is not your truth.
And it seems the Christian community has a problem with that.
Yes.
Well, and I will tell you, and this sticks out in my mind. I have a friend. We've been friends our entire lives. And he went to college. We were in our early 20s, and we were having a discussion on spirituality, truth, religion, all of this. And I was pretty sure I had it all figured out.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, I knew it all.
You were right. All yours were truths.
Exactly. And he told me that truth was subjective to who you were talking to.
What?
He said the sky is blue. Well, if you're colorblind, you don't really know. You know, he said truth is subjective. And I was offended. I was mad. I was like, no, there's black and white.
There's one truth, and it's mine.
Yeah.
I have it.
But since then, I've looked back, and I'm like, man, he had it figured out way before I ever did.
So how does our subconscious get programmed?
It starts from the very beginning. All through our infancy, childhood, and adolescence, we are bombarded with input that we process into our subconscious. And out of all that input, we develop a belief system. And for most of our life, we are convinced that the belief system we have developed is the right one. And we call it truth, or at least the truth as we have been programmed to believe.
Now, no matter how corrupted and inaccurate this belief system may be, it is our reality.
Right.
We perceive the world we live in by this belief system. And amazingly, everything we see, read, and hear on a conscious level reinforces that our belief is true, because the subconscious tells the conscious mind what category to file the information under.
It's like our minds have their own little filter bubbles. Well, we talked about it on the internet.
That's what it's called. It's filtered, and it's your filter, and you just let into the bubble only accept what. But go ahead, Tracy.
Well, and I'm going to pause here and tell you, a lot of people see the three little monkeys. They hear no evil, see no evil.
I use those all the time on my text. You can remember if you don't think about it.
Did you know that those originally came from a Buddhist concept?
Oh, really? Did they?
That was neither hear nor see nor speak anything that doesn't come from your own mind.
Ooh.
Because
what
it was a
what
way
if that's
to be
all
programmed.
We ever did? What if we didn't parrot anything?
Oh, wow.
Boy, wouldn't it be a lot calmer world?
Yes.
And I won't go where my mind is
right?
going. We'll just
but
let
I just
go
thought
with that.
It was an interesting in that concept, and, you know, talking about deprogramming and the way our minds are programmed, to not use that programming at all seems almost impossible.
So our subconscious mind tells the conscious mind what category to file it under.
This is where the law of attraction comes in. For example, if our belief is that most people are dishonest, we will perceive that dishonesty in others at every single turn. In other words, we tend to file everything under distrust, no matter how good the thing may be that someone is doing. Because of our belief that others are dishonest, we tend to focus on the negative that we see in what they're doing.
And do you see how that skews our reality?
Yes.
Now, don't get me wrong. I've got friends in law enforcement, and they deal with...
Absolutely.
The worst of the worst sometimes.
I mean, they don't come to your house because you're having a good day.
Exactly.
They don't show up on the scene because everybody's having a good day. So, and because everybody's doing everything right that they should. So... often you can get this, they get, many people in law enforcement will get this real cynical idea that every, I know I've got friends that are in law enforcement, they lock up everything they've got. They secure and lock up everything because they believe, naturally, they have, over through the years, they're programmed that just people are just really dishonest.
Yes.
And they're out to just steal anything that, you know, and it doesn't make them bad people, that's their programming.
Right.
Okay, so in a case, or in a sense, because we are programmed to believe in the dishonesty of others, we actually gravitate towards the dishonesty of others because our subconscious mind constantly directs us to seek out the negative in other people, and we attract those qualities we expect others to demonstrate. Now, I know that's a hard concept to think about, but we do. Mm-hmm. We're drawn, we actually, our life then becomes a prisoner of this vicious circle. The more dishonesty we witness, the more our subconscious is convinced that it has the right belief system. So with this reinforcement of confidence of being right and true, it impacts our conscious experience even greater.
And there's actually a psychological term for this. It's called the Baader-Meinhof phenomenon, or frequency illusion. And the idea is that when you focus on and believe that everyone is inherently dishonest.
Mm-hmm. We're just using that for an example.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. That you're going to see dishonest people constantly, not because there are that many of them, but because that's what you're looking
for. You're drawn. You're actually, you're attracted to, you don't realize it.
You're attracted to that. A simple metaphor for it is they also call Baader-Meinhof syndrome blue car syndrome. Because you never notice a blue car until you buy one. And once you have a blue car, you see them everywhere.
Yeah. And that's that's a good example. And what Tracy's talking about is you go buy a car and you think it's so unique. Oh, that's such a neat car. And then you're driving down. You say, that's car. That looks just like my car. Uh-huh. And you drive a little further. There's another one. How many cars are there like that? And, you know, you've never even paid a lick of attention. But it is. That's a good point. Good point. Who's got nine?
Okay. Me. So let's go back to our imaginary circle. While we think it is the conscious part of our mind that's in control and dictating our reality, the truth is it's the subconscious part of the mind that is calling the shots. The conscious mind is all but helpless to break the cycle, but the conscious mind can force the subconscious mind to change the way it believes. It can reprogram the subconscious mind, but we're going to get into that later. For now, just allow us to pause for a moment and we'll be right back with part two.
And welcome back to part two of episode 78 of God Beyond the Bible. Today's topic is the law of attraction. In part one, we established that the subconscious mind is where we have stored all of our beliefs about people, the world, and yes, even God. Mm-hmm. We've also established that the subconscious part of the mind rules because the conscious mind always consults the subconscious on how to categorize and interpret what we are experiencing, seeing, hearing, reading, and whatever else we come in contact with.
And do you think when we say, I need to think about that, we're really not thinking about it. We're just consulting our already...
We're processing.
Yeah, we're processing and we're consulting, you know. And I will apologize if anybody hears me whistling through my nose today. I apologize for that.
We're having some late year allergies going through Arkansas.
I think mine are worse than they were in the spring, maybe. According to the law of attraction, we attract what we believe. as in the case of believing that people are dishonest by nature, we see that dishonesty at every turn because that's what we're programmed to see. So, in essence, we see our own reality, which is that people are dishonest, and we project that energy out, and that is what resonates with us. Do you ever think of that?
Yes.
That resonates with us, and so that is our reality.
So what if we are programmed to believe that people are, for the most part, overwhelmingly honest? Does this theory remain true and effective? Of course it does.
Well, yeah.
But there's a reason that it is so hard to program our subconscious in positive ways. That reason is that our subconscious has the role of protecting us from hurt and danger. So it's automatically prone to believe that everyone is dishonest because it's a defense mechanism. If you don't trust anyone, you can't get hurt.
And I don't know, I'm not going to say that we're born with that. It's just easier to gravitate toward the subconscious will accept the negative. Your subconscious will accept those negative behavior things, those negative concepts, easier if it's a protection mode. Okay, I'm not going to let anybody get close to me. People are just, men are all cheaters. Women are all liars. You know, all those things that people get, you know, I've heard people say that. I mean, I've heard, they believed it. They believed it from their hearts, you know, that's.
And not to get, like, really deep into the psychological, but I found people who have encountered a lot of trauma young in life tend to develop that really negative sort of everyone's dishonest, nobody but me can be trusted kind of mentality. And because it is that defense mechanism.
But on the other hand, I've encountered people that weren't real trustworthy, and then they're especially bad not to trust anyone.
Yes, this is true. So let's go beyond self-preservation and consider these two subconscious beliefs from a standpoint of happiness and quality of life. Who do y'all think might be the happiest person? The one who tends to categorize others as basically honest and good, or the person who tends to categorize others as dishonest and bad? I mean, either way we believe, that is our reality that we're going to walk through life with.
And let me tell you something. I'm one of those, and you guys know, I don't hardly lock anything up or do, you know, stuff outside or whatever. I don't go and put padlocks on everything because I'm not concerned that anybody's going to, that's not. Now, you say, yeah, well, wait till somebody steals. But when they do, my thought process is this. Okay. That's not a life changer.
Right.
That's not a life changer for me. So
sure.
So they stole that from me. Okay. Well, and I'll be honest with you. People look at the stuff I've got.
Why do you even have that?
It would get passed over in the yard sale. It's being stolen by stuff. Am I five or who's five?
You are.
Okay. All right. Let's break from our honesty, dishonesty thought. Because that's just one example of that we're using of how the wrong belief is of what is truth can affect our quality of life. Now let's use an example that will test us on a different level. How about the belief that overweight people are dumb, lazy, and unattractive? Now wait, nobody really believes that, do they? No one really sees an overweight person and automatically their conscious mind categorizes that person as unintelligent, ugly, and lazy, do they?
Well, the answer is of course yes. Remember how our subconscious beliefs become stronger with reinforcement that our beliefs are true? Think of how we're bombarded every day by the media reinforcing the belief that the smartest and most desirable people are thin. Each time we witness an ad, a movie, or a TV show depicting thin people as the hero, a type of person to be desired or to desire to be like, that corrupted idea that overweight people our substandard is reinforced. And I have to tell you something that I realized about myself.
Okay. Do you do that? You don't do that, do you?
I do that. I do that. And I'm overweight. And I'm saying, but what has amazed me as I have watched is when I see an overweight person happy and confident in their skin, I am, like, amazed. Like, how can they be happy?
Yeah.
Because
and why are they not feeling like they are less than?
Because they've established in their subconscious, they've programmed, I have value.
Yes.
And I'm a good person, and I'm a beautiful person.
Yes. But
and
you know,
I'm
when
a loving
see,
person. I love people, and people love me.
But I realize that it's been ingrained in me because you see the weight loss things when they have the head, the before and after, and they're all sad, and they're down, and they're depressed, and then they lose that 100 pounds or whatever, and suddenly they're happy. And it amazes me when I see that. And I've realized that I've been programmed to believe.
Well, and I think you can relate to this story.
Have you ever heard somebody overweight call somebody, look at that guy, how fat he is?
Yeah. What did you just say? But no, honestly.
Mr. Pot?
Yeah, exactly. Tabby and I have experienced this before. We spend a lot of time camping and on the lake and stuff. And you'll see a bigger girl in like a bikini or a two-piece swimsuit. Yeah. And there's that part of you that goes, well, she shouldn't be wearing that. But then you sit back and go, why not? Does it matter?
Is she not allowed? Yeah.
If she's comfortable,
she looks
if
for
it's
her.
Not allowed, and you know what? If it bothers you, don't look that way. If
yeah,
there's something about
thing.
That that's eating at you. Well, in fact, it's your problem. It's not her
it
problem.
It is. It is absolutely my problem because I look down there, and she's talking to her friends and splashing with her daughter and having fun, and why am I up here judging her for something that has no effect on
exactly.
me?
Yeah.
All right. So do you know what the worst of this is?
Tell us.
People who actually are overweight believe this way.
Yep.
This is often their perspective of themselves. And every time they have a conscious thought of achieving something, this skewed view of reality of themselves prevents them from doing it. Even when it comes to losing weight, our subconscious advises our conscious mind that we are not capable of it. And it draws on its corrupted self-image. The truth is, our subconscious is the source of all mistrust, racism, hate, and every other misconception
even
of reality.
Even self-loathing.
Yes.
Self-loathing. It's our subconscious that causes us. I've been studying a deal, and I may do a thing on it. It's just hard for me to grasp the concept. Before you can really love anyone or before you can be loved, you have to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many of us really love ourselves? And be honest with you, how many of us who come through the Christian culture...
I was going to say, we talked about that a week or two
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, love about, ourselves because yeah. we're often told.
We're
I mean,
worthless.
It gets reinforced every Sunday.
It is hard to love yourself when you are told that God can't stand to look at you unless he's looking through Christ.
Loving yourself is different than being selfish.
Yes.
That's a difference than being
self-centered. Loving yourself is not egotistical.
No.
Yeah.
Is it me? Mm-hmm. And remember, we will perceive our reality through the filter of our subconscious, which is an altered and corrupted view of reality. Yet, that belief is reinforced with every misinterpreted experience. And that's what it comes down to. We just see out of the experience mm-hmm. what we want to say. That guy's a crook. Mm-hmm. I can just tell by looking at him. You know, he couldn't. Anyway. So, the only true way to escape the vicious trap that brings us so much grief and unhappiness is to change our beliefs. And that's so easy. No, it isn't easy. Because remember, the subconscious believes it is protecting us from harm. So any attempt to change those core beliefs will first be perceived as danger and will be met with fear.
That's right. So with that, give us just a moment to regroup, and we're going to be right back with part three.
And welcome back to part three of episode 78 of God Beyond the Bible. Today's topic is on the concept of the law of attraction. I think we've pretty much established that our subconscious beliefs dictate how we perceive reality and the world around us. Our deeply ingrained, but often corrupted beliefs seriously limit our ability to be happy and experience true peace and joy. Remember, the subconscious is designed for self-preservation. Therefore, its mission is to perceive and thwart danger. The problem is, if we allow it to go unchecked, it perceives everything and everyone as a threat. It begs to ponder if paranoia is associated with the subconscious belief system becoming so corrupted that it completely alters a person's perception of reality. We'll leave that question to the experts, though.
Yeah, but it does make you.
Yeah.
It does.
It does.
Beg to ponder that. That just wonder, you think, how far can I go down this road of negative of everyone's, and mm-hmm. then it becomes everyone's out to get you. Everyone, mm-hmm. and before you know it, it just, it gets, it can, and you wonder, do we, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I would have loved to. If I had life to do over again, I'd go get me a degree in psychology. And
yeah, I love psychology.
You know, and psychotherapy or whatever it is. So let's question ourselves. Is my subconscious belief system attracting unhappiness and grief in my life? Could it be causing me to see life through a negative filter of what is acceptable or unacceptable? When I actually do encounter enlightenment in any form, does my subconscious belief automatically direct my conscious mind to file it as unacceptable because it doesn't agree with my subconscious programming? Remember, subconscious don't like to change anything.
Right. Okay, so a good test for the times that we live in, especially here in America, is politics.
Oh, not the P word.
I despise politics. Yeah, I despise them too. But it's a good example. Excuse me.
If our subconscious is programmed to believe that one party is good and the other bad, we may find ourselves blinded to the reality that there are good people with good intentions and ideas on the other side. Better yet, when we hear that the other party wants to do this or do that, do we automatically file it as bad and unacceptable? The truth is, we may know little or nothing about the truth of an issue, yet we automatically categorize it good or bad depending on our deeply ingrained political beliefs.
To be honest, guys, the reason we don't like change is because our subconscious is so resistant to change, and I'm one of those.
Yes.
And it sends out these warnings that bad things are coming our way if we challenge
danger, Will Robinson. I'm sorry, go back and read that again. Remember, you guys never saw that Lost in Space, did
no.
you?
The, yes.
The, have you ever seen that? Anyway, the robot, danger, Will
Robinson, danger. All right.
Go back and start that again. I'm so sorry.
To be honest, the reason we don't like change is because our subconscious is so resistant to change. It sends out warnings of bad things coming our way if we challenge or change a long-held belief. We're often robbed of happiness and success by our own subconscious belief that we are not worthy of good coming to us. So in essence, we never give good a chance because our subconscious shoots it down before we can give it honest conscious thought.
And the thing of it is, we are not attracting good to us. We're not looking for good. If your subconscious is so negative that it's told you, and there again, the Christian culture often whips us down.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of a lighter thing of how the law of attraction works, okay. But I was reading it, and this lady's name, I can't remember her name, Christine Bradstreet. I found it online.
Bradstreet. Okay.
And she said that she wanted to try the law of attraction thing and just see what was happening. She wanted to attract something into her life on that day. And so what she did, she gave it a moment's thought and daffodils popped into her head.
Okay.
So she went through the middle mental steps of affirming that someone would bring her a daffodil that day. And she affirmed it like she knew it to be true. She said, I gave thanks for the gift I knew I was going to receive, and then I went about my day just like any other day. She was a chiropractor. Her last patient of the morning shift came in holding an 8x11-inch photograph behind her back. She had printed it earlier in the day. She came over to her and said, I saw this online today, and I printed it for you. When I saw it, I thought of you. I reached for the photograph, and it was a picture of a hillside of daffodils.
Huh.
Okay. See?
And that sounds silly, and you automatically dismiss it, but...
Well, we're going to talk about... But on the other hand, we talk about in the Christian faith, well, if you believe it, you visualize, you believe it and all of that.
And
we do exactly the same
example.
Thing,
yes.
But yet we don't work on the subconscious about program... You know, we're going to talk about that in a little bit,
you
though,
used
anyway.
To tell a story about a woman that she met that... She said that she would always get worried when things were going really good because it meant that something bad was coming. And that's sort of that tendency.
Yeah, things are good. There's a woman in an elevator, Little Rock Hospital, you know, and I'm not going to do the voice because it would, you know, but she was, you know, really Southern. Mm-hmm. But she said, well... it was a doctor. Asked her. The doctor in the elevator said, well, how are things? Just being nice. Well, things are good right now, but when things are good, I really get worried because I know they're only going to get worse and bad things are on the way.
And that's sort of that mentality that we have.
But see, that's a protection. We don't get disappointed. Yeah. See, that's our subconscious trying to protect. And that's deeply ingrained. And guys, you don't whip this stuff out. You don't You don't master the law of attraction in a week or a month or a year.
When you're like that, you find yourself, because you won't let yourself be happy. Because if you're happy,
you're afraid. Then, yeah, it's fear, because it rules by fear. Am I five?
I don't know. I got us all off. I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Let's use our beliefs about God for an example of how our life can be changed for the better when we change our deeply ingrained subconscious beliefs. Every positive change in our subconscious beliefs will produce dramatic change in our reality. It will change the people and things we attract and are attracted to. This is the law of attraction. We are aware that this law of attraction has unfortunately been abused by those who see it as only a means to gain material wealth, much like some who exploit the Christian religion by packaging it as a means to material wealth. While a wrong belief system may be keeping us from being more successful in this area, any true free-thinking spiritual seeker knows that material wealth does not equate to happiness.
And I'm going to throw this in here because I know it's a really controversial book, but I don't think that everything that was written by Norman Vincent Peale in The Power of Positive Thinking should be discounted.
No.
Because he did have a tendency to really push the material wealth side of things, but he had a lot of really important things for changing the way your mind thinks. And
And before we move into this, did you know that there are actually three sub-laws of the laws of attraction?
No, what are they?
Like attracts like.
Oh, yes.
Nature abhors a vacuum. Uh-huh. And the present is always perfect.
Yes. And and that nature abhors a vacuum. Something's always going to feel.
Yes.
A void. Yes. And that goes along with what Jesus said. He gave a little illustration. He said there was a man that was cured of this demon. And this demon left. And so the demon came back sometime later and said, Jesus said, found the house swept and clean and vacant. And he brought seven other demons worse than himself back into the... Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure I know all there is to know about that, but I know Jesus was saying, you're going to have to fill the void with something.
Yes.
You're going to have to. You can't just say, okay, I'm not going to believe that anymore. Because you don't stop believing. You change beliefs. Does that make sense? Well, you only replace a subconscious, and when they're deeply ingrained, if you've spent, in my case, almost 60 years reinforcing something, and then you start trying, that subconscious is not going to give it up.
This is kind of one of those things, and this is a terrible analogy, but there's a long-standing joke that goes around about smokers at AA meetings. Uh-huh. But the idea behind it is that you never just stop a habit. You always replace it with something else. And often with alcohol, it's smoking or something of the like.
Of course.
Yeah. And for smokers, a lot of times it's mints or candy or something of that.
Or really increase the coffee intake.
Yes.
You know, go around coffee, you know, something all the time. That's, of course it is.
Okay, so some tips on changing our deeply ingrained subconscious beliefs that may hinder our perception of reality and consequently limit our ability to be happy and enjoy life. Let's look at some of those.
Okay.
Number one, only you can change your subconscious core beliefs. No other person can convince your subconscious that it is an error. It will automatically trigger the conscious mind to categorize it as unacceptable. And our subconscious can put up some powerful resistance. It uses fear to bring the conscious mind into subjection.
And it's almost like a battle. There was a book once, The Battle for the Mind. Mm-hmm. But it really is. And maybe this is a little bit what, maybe it's a little bit of what Paul was talking about when he said, the things I want to do, I don't do. The things I really want to do, I can't do. The things I need, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if he was, you know, because that subconscious is what really rules. We don't realize it rules our life.
Well, as someone with anxiety, I fight that sort of having to consciously tell myself, there's nothing we can do about this. Stop thinking about it. You have to let this go.
Stop obsessing, yeah. And it even gets more and more reinforced and worse if you get that loop of videotape playing in your head and you just keep playing the thing over and over. Okay, so Trayson said, like she said, it's difficult to change, but you can change your subconscious beliefs. Choose only one subject. You may use politics that we mentioned earlier, but we prefer to use God. Take, for instance, that I believe that God is basically angry with humanity, and we hear that a lot, right?
Yes.
He's basically angry with humanity because of our tendency to fail when it comes to meeting his expected standard. Now, let's ask ourselves why we believe that. Why do I believe that? Why is that true? And before you just say, well, because the Bible... Did your subconscious when we ask that, why is that true? Just then, when I ask that question, why is that true that we think that God is just basically angry with all humanity? Did your subconscious send a little twinge of fear when you questioned that core belief? Yeah. Oh, no. How could you question God's wrath and anger toward man's sin? See? That's how our subconscious belief system rules and limits our life. Or maybe your subconscious answered because the Bible says he's a vengeful God.
Now ask, is the Bible a divine book given to us by supernatural means? Or is it a collection of writings of seekers just like us who depict God as they each perceived him in their life? Perhaps if your core belief is that the Bible is purely divine in nature, you got another uneasy feeling and an urge to categorize the whole conversation as unacceptable.
That was a really hard one for me to overcome in this journey.
It's difficult for anybody to overcome the idea and replace that subconscious standard that the Bible is divine. That's God. It's just God wrote it. He just spoke it and wrote it right to us. It's hard to change that. But when we, and often what you have to do is like we've done and what we've been doing here at God Beyond the Bible, you have to listen open-minded to some of this, and then it starts soaking in. It starts going in. You go, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, that really aligns with what I know is truth. And your subconscious, of course, is screaming, no, don't listen, plug your ears, don't listen to that.
All right, so now let's deny the screams of our subconscious that we're in serious danger and not categorize the thought that God may be all about grace, love, and mercy as unacceptable. And just consider how much better our life and our reality would be if we would just find it in ourselves to believe that God loves us unconditionally and wants to bless us at every opportunity. Visualize how much more relaxed and peaceful and spiritually motivated we would be to pursue a relationship with him. After all, doesn't the Bible reinforce this belief just as much as the vengeful God belief? One writer said God is love. Another writer said that since God is for us, who could ever be against us? And another said, know ye not that you are God's masterpiece?
But we don't, for some reason, our subconscious doesn't embrace those like it will the negative.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It'll just automatically, because we've been so programmed towards that. Okay. Now you see how we have the opportunity to reinforce a more positive belief in our subconscious? When we put aside our subconscious beliefs for just a moment and ask questions like, does it really make any sense that God created us with the ability to make poor choices and fail? And then when we exercise that choice poorly and did fail, he's not only out for revenge on the ones who actually made the choice, but he is out for revenge on all their descendants forever and will make some pay with eternal suffering. Those beliefs have been programmed into us. We did not get that from a relationship with the Most High.
Right. Now consider what happens over time when we change this deeply ingrained subconscious belief. The law of attraction comes into play. In our conscious reality, when something happens, our go-to belief is that God is good and loves us unconditionally. And we see good in the world and in people, and our subconscious tells our conscious to categorize it as good. In short, in our new belief, we are attracted to good because we are expecting it. And we attract good because we expect it when we believe that God is unconditional love and grace and mercy and peace.
And the Master clearly tried to relate this truth to us when he said, whatever you ask for it believing and it will be yours. In other words, change your subconscious belief that those things are impossible to one that it's very possible. People are always saying you just need to believe. The truth is, changing an old belief or embracing a new one takes time and conscious commitment. In another place, the Master said, when you ask, ask as though you've already received it. That's visualization. Imagine what life would be like if that were to happen, and then use that visualization to change your belief. Our subconscious thinks it is protecting us from hurt and disappointment when we don't get what we're asking for. So it tells us to categorize the thought as unbelievable and unacceptable.
When something really good unexpectedly happens to us, why do we say, I still can't believe something this good could happen to me?
Mm-hmm.
It's because we're being honest. Our subconscious belief is that we don't deserve blessing. Blessing comes to other people who are better than me. Only bad things and disappointment come to me. The law of attraction says we are creating our own reality, negative or positive.
Before we close out, I'm going to let Tracen close us out today, but I'm going to share a quote just to kind of help you get that subconscious moving in the right direction from Marianne Williamson. She said, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others."
That's beautiful. So, like all the topics we explore here on God Beyond the Bible, today's discussion doesn't even scratch the surface of the law of attraction. We only intend for this to be an introduction to the concept. There are lots of YouTube videos available on this topic.
Blogs and all that stuff. Yeah.
And we encourage you to do your own research. Until next time, may God's grace, peace, and love be on you, in you, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible. Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.